Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below.
We had serious internet issues while recording this interview, so bear with us. The quality is lower than what you're used to, but I think that the regen stories from Uganda are worth it. Why is Uganda the place if you want to launch and build an agroecology and regenerative agriculture and food company? Join me on a journey which led one of our guests of today from tasting how agriculture practices have changed and let him focus on agroecology. We discuss why Uganda enjoys political support for agroecology and the importance of different stewardship ownership models and the importance of different investment models and why the biggest impact in Region Ag can actually be made on the African continent. And we unpack the key differences of a startup studio versus an incubator or an accelerator and why the startup studio model is so exciting. This is the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast, Investing as if the planet mattered, where we talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities, and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why my focus on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land and our sea, grow our food, what we eat, wear, and consume. And it's time that we as investors, big and small, and consumers start paying much more attention to the dirt/soil underneath our feet. To make it easy for fans to support our work, we launched our membership community, and so many of you have joined us as a member. Thank you. If our work created value for you, and if you have the means, and only if you have the means, consider joining us. Find out more on gumroad.com/investinginregenag. That is gumroad.com/investinginregenag. Or find the link below. Welcome to another episode. Today with the co-founders of Rutical, a startup studio that enables purpose-driven entrepreneurs in Uganda to build and own their regenerative agri-food companies. Welcome Joachim and Hannes. And to start with a personal question to both of you, but I'm going to start with Joachim. What brought you to, like, from all the different career paths you could have chosen or you could have fallen into, how did you end up focusing on soil?
I think, you know, a lot of people know that agriculture is the backbone of the African continent. About 70% of Uganda's working population alone is employed in agriculture. And of course, you know, my own family, all the way from my great grandparents, up to me right now are farmers. And farming has provided, you know, livelihood and the food that nourishes us. In my lifetime as well, I've seen how farming has generally gone from being a bit obvious, producing delicious foods, to needing a lot of external inputs and producing food that is not that delicious. In a way, farming has become unreliable over time, and the additives we're making have made food also less tasty. And one thing that's interesting is farmers that I've interacted with, that I've seen even my own family, are aware of and have seen the dangers of what is happening with chemicals being added to boost growth and the dangers that it brings both to the soil, to crops, and also to health. But many continue to do this because they don't have many alternatives. And so regenerative agriculture and agroecology provide this alternative. And give us the opportunity to farm while building back soils, producing healthy and nutritious foods, and restoring our biodiversity. And I came across these two concepts when I met Hannes actually a few years ago in Kampala when we were collaborating on a new program. And this fit quite well with what we're doing at Shona. Our work at Shona is about building good businesses. We believe business is a force for good, and the ultimate purpose of business is to benefit society. And this is why we call these businesses good businesses. And when I came across these ideas of regenerative agriculture and agroecology, we saw this at Shona as we saw the potential for regenerative agriculture as the best way of practicing good business in agriculture. Because the power of regenerative agriculture to build back soils and ecosystems while providing social benefits, creating competitive business value, decent jobs, and fueling the growth of local and regional markets and economies makes regenerative agriculture enterprises worthy investments for our common future and for a sustainable food system. So I'm personally excited about this opportunity to build regenerative agriculture businesses, and Rutico is just one of our initiatives now in this area under our growing program that we now call the Agri-Food Founders Program at Shona.
Okay, so thank you so much for that, and so many follow-ups. But let's first welcome our second guest of today to the show, Hannes. I don't think we ever even met in person. Maybe now you're going to tell me we did. But I know a bit about your journey, and of course I've followed you on LinkedIn. I highly recommend everybody to do that. I will put the link below. But welcome on the podcast, and for you the same question as for Joachim, and maybe a different journey. But very curious about what led you to focus on agroecology, to focus on regenerative agriculture, and of course to focus on soil.
Yeah, thanks, Koen, and nice to be here. I'm really honored to be part of this show. We didn't meet yet in person, but it feels like we're friends for so many years listening to your podcast. So really thanks for that. I'm Hannes. I'm from Belgium. I live in Uganda now. Actually, my uncle, my late uncle, the brother to my grandma, he had a mixed farm. As usual, back in the days, all large Belgian families had a priest, a farmer, and some local entrepreneurs in their offspring. And so I really remember being on that farm of my grand uncle enjoying the ride on the tractor to feed the cows, and actually once a year we would gather with the whole family to participate in harvesting the beets manually with 40-50 people in the field. And so those are my first memories related to farming. In addition, I've really been taught justice, fairness, and international solidarity from a very young age, with both my parents in social jobs, my father in international cooperation, Latin America, West Africa. So I remember vaguely a visit to Bolivia when I was 7 years old, and we would visit farmers in the Altiplano. And I think based on that visit, I was really determined to do something related to water and agriculture. So fast forward, when I left university with a commercial degree in business engineering, I was still like set to do something with water or agriculture or both. And so right after leaving university, I moved to Peru, where I've lived and worked 5 years as part of the agroecology movement. And I really appreciated the strong cosmovision, no, the whole and one vision of the cosmos and the universe we're part of, deeply embedded in Quechua Andean culture and also agriculture, actually. And I really came to see agroecology as a motor for rural development, and really was keen on spending probably the rest of my life on that idea. So in Peru, I've worked with the National Organic Farmers Association, smallholder farmers in the mountains, the Costa, the coast areas, and the selva, the rainforest. We've worked on all things from training in agroecology, production capacity building, mapping genetic biodiversity of roots and tubers, organizational strengthening, market access, business development, and also advocacy on the regional and national levels. Back in Europe, after those 5 years, I've joined La Ruche qui dit oui, or the Food Assembly in English, probably Europe's largest short food supply chain network, a French e-commerce startup that gathered, or for which I've developed a business in Belgium and the Netherlands under the name of Boeren en Buren, farmers and neighbors, in translated in English. And in those two countries, we've gathered 1,000 producers, set up 120 local food communities, and basically connected neighbors directly to their farmers in their surroundings via that web application. And in the last years, that platform reached up to 12 million in annual sales after I started it back in 2015. And so working with the Food Assembly, I've really come to love the power of social entrepreneurship and how it aligns and also simplifies incentives. Basically, the more revenues you make as a business, the more impact you'll have. And yeah, that last experience also showed me what it does to a business to have unrealistic growth ambitions because of the way they are financed, short-term financial pressures taking over at some point, and that also moved me to look at ownership as part of the Rutical principles. In short, and to come back to your question, I think I'm more about people than soils per se, but of course, reviving soils is also a way of reviving our communities, our landscapes, and the people that live on them. So that's why I'm so passionate about soils, regenerative agriculture, and agroecology. So maybe to add on that, after 3 months in Uganda, we moved here in 2020. I basically came along with my wife to support her career. She's working on innovation in education. After 3 months, I was doing some consultancy, but it was really itching to build again. And so I was asking myself, what am I going to do? Can I be a business developer for some agri-food venture? And when I asked myself, I've noticed a lot of successful agri-food businesses in Uganda are white-owned, and there's always some white, usually male person involved, and many of them actually are Dutch, like you, Koen. So I was thinking about this deeply, and I said, let me try to use my privilege and my position and access to funding to help Ugandans to build the businesses they see fit for the Ugandan food system.
And Joachim, do you remember when you met this guy from Belgium, but had also lived in Peru and have helped build this startup in Belgium? You remember the first time you met him, and what did you think? You can share anything here.
Yeah, no, I think we met in 2021. Yeah, and I think I had actually didn't have many expectations at the time. We were collaborating on another initiative that he was part of and leading, Generation Food Program, which we now implement here. But I think one of the things that, you know, that I think drew me and asked, you know, our team, because, you know, Hannes met with me and my co-founder, Ivan. And so it's not just Joachim, it's really Shona. I think what drew us to Hannes was his deep passion and enthusiasm for regenerative agriculture, for fairness. And so that naturally infected us. And I would say, you know, I credit all our work in this area now to meeting Hannes. And, you know, he sparked a lot of work there that is now going to go and leave.
And what then led to Rutical? Because I think it could have taken many different routes and many different directions. It could have, a few consultancy things together and sort of stopped there. Like what gave birth, or what seeds were planted to stay in the theme? To that led at the end, or not at the end, actually, where you are now. And then we'll unpack the startup studio and we'll unpack Rutical further. But what led to that? Why was it a logical, or maybe it wasn't, a logical path?
I think when I've met Joachim and Ivan, we've been working on a Generation Food, an incubator program. We've also worked on an accelerator, Nature, which is also currently run by Shona, and we should also mention it later. My initial thoughts were actually about a kind of incubating. How can we better support agroecological entrepreneurs to emerge, grow their business, and thrive? No, but then I came across the Startup Studio model thanks to your podcast, actually, Koen, and to and with Fresh Venture Studio. No, they're basically doing the same that we are doing, but they do it in Europe. They're older than us. We call them our European sister, and we work closely together. So for me, there were three founding principles of which eventually Rutikol as a startup studio emerged. No, the first one is agroecology, organic agriculture, and regenerative agriculture as the best paradigms of our food system, for our future food systems. And there's a huge debate there about the similarities and differences between those three terms. But Hans Herren, BioVision's president, once said, regenerative agriculture is agroecology if done right. And I really closely adhere to that statement. No, and I've also really loved climate farmers on the podcast, saying that an investment that enhances the life holding capacity of a system and the ability of that system to act according to its purpose is what it makes. What makes it regenerative, right? So those two are really important when discussing definitions or differences. The second pillar is purpose-driven entrepreneurship. So looking at inclusive business models and really building businesses that are commercially viable, scalable, and impactful at the same time. And also a bit moving away from the niche export focus for organic, really trying to make agroecological healthy food available for all Ugandans rather than focused on those elite markets. And then the third principle is about alternative ownership models. No, how can we change the way our agri-food businesses are financed, managed, and owned? And that's where steward ownership comes in. How did we get there? Basically, the last piece for me was steward ownership. Then I heard about Fresh and the Startup Studio model. And then we ran into our first financial partners, the Dune Foundation.
And so, Joachim, for you and the work you were already doing, because that is already a lot, like how did this Startup Studio puzzle piece, let's say, how did that fit into the bigger puzzle that you are building? And why did you decide to add another layer to, let's say, probably already quite a full week and a full year?
Yeah, I think the biggest puzzle for us was how agroecology, the principles behind agroecology and regenerative agriculture fit well with our values and thinking and belief system. I think there was that alignment initially, right? Because it's... So that alignment between kind of our values and how we think about business, right? When you look at agroecology and this idea of, you know, how you're producing quality products and services for customers, how you're creating value that is shared by the majority and not the few, right? How you're spreading wealth, how you building a business while protecting the environment, right? All these, how are you building a business that takes care of its employees? All these ideas are enshrined in the principles of agroecology and regenerative agriculture. And for us, you know, agriculture is one of the key sectors that we've been kind of working in. We've worked with a couple of agribusinesses. The values of agroecology and regenerative agriculture fit quite well with our thinking around good business. And so for us, you know, that alignment and fit made a lot of sense, which has gotten us to adopt agroecology and regenerative agriculture as our thinking of how you build a good business in the agriculture sector. And so it's now a core part of how we think. And so when that alignment happened for us, the part of the way of doing it, which is a studio model, was just an additional smaller piece to add to this bigger story.
And can you walk us through the studio model for people? I mean, of course, we'll link the interviews we've done with Fresh below, but I'm also assuming not everybody listened to that. You should, but still. Can you walk us through what a studio model looks like, as I'm imagining most people haven't maybe heard about it, but don't really know what a startup studio actually is, and more importantly, also what it isn't?
Yeah, a startup studio basically brings together people, talent, financial resources, and ideas, no? Mind-breaking or very innovative ideas, ideally. So that's what we're all about. And we're really trying to, as you said in the introduction, to power Ugandan entrepreneurs to identify which problems need to be addressed in the Ugandan food systems, which business solutions can they build to address those problems, and how can we better equip them with mentorship and financial resources, or as Shona likes to put it, capacity building, connections, and capital. And so that's what we do. We build businesses and at some point want to spin them out of the studio, and then also expect certain returns in the future that will allow us to reinvest in the growth of our startup studio and pay out our stakeholders. So for us, the studio model is really a fantastic way to work towards place-based investing and to de-risk and mobilize investing in food systems transformation, especially in agriculture, especially in a region like East Africa, which is often perceived high risk, which is also a myth we wanna start debunking. And so our theory of change basically revolves around the idea of building a portfolio of regenerative agri-food businesses that then contribute to the organic agriculture movement and strengthening that entire momentum from agroecology in the country and in the region. Rutical is, I would say, a first in its kind, because we start with a participatory food system analysis. In August, we're now in our first cohort, by the way. So in August, we've spent 10 days with 40 people training them in regenerative agriculture, purpose-driven entrepreneurship, and we've conducted a deep analysis of the food system to then build businesses to address the key challenges we have identified together. And this we call it systemic venture building, right? And what's key here is that it's Ugandan entrepreneurs choosing what to build, building it, and in the end also owning it and benefiting from the businesses once they scale and become successful. Our goal is to bring solid business development support in agroecology, and we've seen the agroecology movement around the world. It's really strong, but we've seen that gap and that urge to bring more purpose-driven businesses in agroecology. On top of that, in Uganda, we've seen a lot of short-term, light-touch and generic business development support programs that often don't offer access to finance. And one of our golden rules is don't do business development without access to finance. And so we're looking at the studio as an active co-founder, long-term, very hands-on, and also with skin in the game. No, we can only benefit if our businesses do well. Let me stop there for now.
And
maybe I'll just
go ahead, please.
I'll chime in here. You know, you asked about the differences between the studio model and other models, right? So you have, we're implementing a few other models here. So in this space, so you know, we have the incubator that Hannes talked about earlier on, Generation Food Uganda, that is now evolving into another wider program called AfriFood Links. So that's an incubator. It takes existing ideas and helps incubate them and help them grow. And then you have the accelerator model that focuses on, where we focus on already existing ideas that have a lot of traction, you know, helping accelerate their growth. Helping accelerate their growth. With the studio model, so with the other two models, you have existing ideas. You're working with already existing ideas. With the studio model, you're working with pre-idea entrepreneurs, right? You're focusing on entrepreneurs who have not yet come up with an idea, that they come up, we help them create, come up with their own ideas during the studio process. That Hannes referenced at first boot camp as well. We work with them to identify the problem, and then fall in love with the problem, and then following that, come up with, that, with the idea that they want to work on. But what is exciting, you know, amongst all these models, I think for me, what excites us about Rutikon, the studio model, is this opportunity to build the purest forms of regenerative agriculture businesses from the beginning. And so that's the advantage we have with a model like Rutikon.
Yeah, because you don't have to. I think it's interesting because the startup studio or venture studio model sounds a bit counterintuitive to the story we like to tell each other of the entrepreneur in the garage that has a dream for the last 20 years and then built something, et cetera, et cetera. And in reality, that's often very different. And studios around the world in other sectors have shown, and Fresh as well, and you're showing in this first cohort, that there is actually the route to entrepreneurship and to specific companies can be different in a sense that people with entrepreneurial experience, if they are exposed to the systemic issues and opportunities in a food system or in a system, in this case, food system, and they're helped well and coached and assisted, they will end up building very interesting, very pure, as you say, Joachim, businesses that are needed. Because I think that's a frustration if you run an incubator or an accelerator, you have to work with what is there already, and you cannot really steer. I mean, you can steer a bit probably, but not too much. And in the venture studio model, you can actually really actively steer towards what's needed and where the biggest potential impact and also opportunities may lay. And hopefully, I don't know if there's a term for that, but they have a lot less waste of talent of people working on something that at the end might not be successful or very impactful, let's say. So that makes it interesting. And now as you're in the first cohort, what we're recording this at the beginning of 2024, what are they going through? Where are you now? If you had to take like a picture or have to take stock of what currently is happening in a cohort, like how long is it? How many months? Where is the group currently at? What are they going through as we're recording this?
Yeah, let's share a bit about the roller coaster we've been going through the last half year or so.
I've seen it from inside at Fresh, yeah. Or from the outside, sorry. And I can imagine, but I would love to hear the roller coaster, the version, the East Africa version.
Yeah. So to what you said, Koen, the venture studio, startup studio really tries to turn business building into a repeatable process, right? So we talk about the playbook a lot, or some people call it the flywheel. And the more we go through building those ventures and to those systemic venture building cycles, the more we learn. No? So this is really an opportunity also for Rutikol to become an expert in regenerative venture building here in Uganda and East Africa. And it will automatically lead to us becoming better in attracting and nurturing talent in that space, but also to turn into a fundraising platform. No? So that's part of the, let's say, the bigger dream we are about. And this startup studio or startup studio argument for leading to higher success rates. No, startup studios are known to show 30 to 50% success rates, shorter build times, and so on. While compared to classic venture building, where you're kind of hunting for the unicorn, and so we don't want to do that. To your question, so we started recruiting in May last year. We had in a bit more than a month, we had 750 applicants wanting to join the studio.
Wow.
We've called 100 of them.
Good
after
luck with screening.
Yeah. Luckily, we automated a huge part of the screening with an entrepreneur selection platform developed by Aincup to decide on their funding. And so we've called the 100 most promising candidates, had a deep interview with them, and then finally selected 40 to join our bootcamp, 10 days to become trained food system change makers. No? And so in those 10 days, we've conducted that analysis of the food system, identified key challenges and opportunities, and we really did what they call problem loving. So that was in August. And then from out of those 40, we've selected 24 to join us half September on a 3-month systemic venture building journey in which we moved from problem validation to ideation, prototyping, business modeling, and also rapid testing. So here the focus is really on human-centered design and designing always with that food systems lens in mind. Out of that, we emerged, we came out with 8 businesses being led by 16 founders in residence at Rutical. And in December, we had our first pitch day and we represented those 8 businesses. We'll be happy to share the link as well.
Please do.
And now we're at the stage of deciding which will be the businesses that we will invite into our studio to incorporate, launch and fund 5 or 6 of those businesses in 2024. And then we'll work with them on a weekly basis. We really help them to get the basics right, to get up and running, to keep on focusing on customers, working in that human-centric way, testing, questioning all their assumptions, and building all the way to product market fit and beyond. And so at some point next year in 25, we're expecting our first businesses to spin out of the studio, which is when they will reach a certain level, significant levels of sales and revenue, or when they will manage to get some follow-on funding onboarded. And so that's the plan for now. And ideally, dependent on fundraising, we also want to launch a second cohort in Uganda by the end of this year. And we would love to replicate in another East African country sometime 2025 or 2026.
What is your biggest surprise? Positive, negative, or what is that really you wouldn't have expected, let's say, in August when you started this journey with the 40 people and the 10 days deep dive?
Yeah, I think what comes out strongly to me is that our methodology, the playbook we've been implementing since August, really worked out very well. We've really managed to move from deeply understanding the key challenges to ideating, defining solutions that might address those challenges. And we've also seen quite some complementarity between the businesses, no? Which is, of course, an added advantage that we have as a business builder is that we're learning 5 times as fast if we're building 5 businesses this year. And we already see that among the different businesses, let's say, developed over the last months, we also, there's so much opportunity for collaboration. And that again, it comes very close to the basic or the principles of agroecology, right?
And now turning it to you, Joachim, what is your biggest surprise you've seen over the last months?
Yeah, and I think I mentioned this. To the entrepreneurs themselves, right? But just how quickly they're able to go from having no idea to having ideas, and even having physical products for those that are building products and testing them in the market and having customers in such a short period of time. We're talking about a 3-month period. Was quite, we've seen entrepreneurs work with them, but all. that was surprising, right? Meeting a group of individuals at the beginning with no idea, who didn't know each other, and after a 3-month period now, have formed teams, are working close together, and have built products and services that have actually tested and are selling was quite humbling. From this process.
And actually, a follow up question on the region and Uganda specifically to you, Joachim. Why? I mean, you mentioned at the beginning the challenges and issues with agriculture in your home country, what you've seen and tasted, literally. Why is it such a perfect place? I mean, I know investors always ask, why now and why here in this case and why this team? Why is it such a perfect place for an agroecology/regen focused studio? Like what makes for people that haven't been or haven't been in a long time, why is Uganda such an interesting place for the agroecology revolution?
There's a lot of people that are practicing agriculture for their main livelihood. I think that's the first. The second, when you think about the degradation of soil, actually, while we're doing badly, we're not doing so badly. So there's an opportunity to arrest what has already happened right now, and kind of return us back. Return us back and rebuild our biodiversity and soils. I think that's the other moment we're in right now. But then there are also other things that are going on, including things like, you know, organic agriculture has been organic agriculture and organic farming has been very popular here. We have the highest number of organically certified farmers here in Uganda. And then I think the most important part is the political goodwill that ideas like agroecology and regenerative agriculture enjoy right now in this moment. There's a lot of alignment with the president, with the ministers, with the Ministry of Agriculture in the principles of agroecology and regenerative agriculture, to the extent that you know, organizations like Monsanto have been kept out. Ideas like
genetically modified GMO.
GMOs, yes. Ideas like GMOs are still being fought. While chemicals are being used, they're still shunned upon. So we have the right political will right now to boldly advance these ideas of agroecology and regenerative agriculture. So I think it's such a wonderful moment to be building a studio and advancing agroecology and regenerative agriculture right now in Uganda.
I think a lot of people are very jealous at the moment to hear that you have political support for agroecology in general. I think many places wish that there was, let's say, any understanding of agriculture in general, let alone agroecology principles and regenerative agriculture. So how did that happen, or why is that now that you have, is it the angle of food security with COVID? Was it already before? Like how, or has it been because of the success of organic until now? Why do you think, I mean, it's a difficult question, but that you have and a minister and a president that are listening or at least understanding to a certain extent what you're working on?
Hannes, feel free to dive in here, but I think for me it's a combination of having a president. So one, there's, you know, food security, that's important, but also secondly, there's having a president that believes in the traditional methods of doing things, a Pan-African at heart, who believes in traditional methods of doing things, sometimes to the detriment of progress, but also in this case has saved us a lot from going the route of, you know, GMOs and the large agriculture companies. So I think that's the main one. You'll see that, you know, Kenya was the same until recently when they changed their president to the current president, who newly came in and signed a bill that allowed GMOs into the country, which is a big departure. So I don't know how much of us we can protect after our president is gone, because, you know, there's a lot of pressure from different angles, as you know, the large agriculture companies. But this is one of the areas that, you know, that he has been stubborn about, or that he has been very slow to move on, if that's the right word.
It might help I'm curious about Hannes' perspective from the outset as well, but it might help. We actually interviewed him recently, that the president of Slow Food, the international movement for good, clean and fair food, actually comes from Uganda and lives there and is very active, Eddie, in the local space as well. But what do you see, Hannes, as an outsider from lived on two other different
Eddie,
continents.
Eddie is a friend of Rutico.
Yeah, so what do you...
Eddie is a friend of Rutico. What I see, I think Uganda is located about 1,000 meters above sea level and has quite a lush green environment overall. And so very favorable agroecological conditions in general, abundant water resources. You can really observe quickly degrading environments, soils, water resources, and so on, right? So I think we're really at getting close to a tipping point, maybe, and so this provides a huge opportunity to regenerate those watersheds, to regenerate those communities and soils, and to also build or improve livelihoods of those millions of smallholder farmers, right? And that's a parallel that I've seen from Peru to India to Uganda, is that in rural economies, agriculture and the regenerative kind preferably is really a key to unlock livelihood improvements for millions of smallholder farmers and Ugandans in this case.
Yeah, and I've heard, but absolutely correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, I've never been to Uganda, but that it's, I think, Take Latonas, who we've interviewed many times, who are definitely working on the cash crop side, but doing fascinating things on the South African side and also East Africa now, said, funny enough, if I compare to like farmers that I know here in Northern Europe, etc., it's almost easier to make the jump because especially Uganda, but other places haven't been so addicted yet to the chemical input side. And with amazing compost and with amazing input you can make yourself or get quite high quality in easy steps, you can make enormous jumps very quickly. Like you can make, like the impact is quite quick, and it's almost quicker than if you would take a potato farmer in the Netherlands and have him or her go through a transition. Like it's a lot longer than some of the work they're doing or they're seeing, like the soil responds quicker and input side is easier. I mean, it's almost easier to do. Plus you have no subsidies, but also no subsidies on the other side of things to keep the current system going, which might help. So the impact on the soil, of course, you're focusing on companies that are not always, I mean, you're not building farms, but the impact on soil could be even quicker in many of the places you operate. And then so in the companies you've seen, or the companies that you would like to see, like what, just to give us a flavor, of course you cannot tell who you're going to invite yet, but just give us a flavor of the 8 that presented, and we'll put a link below as well if you want to see the pitch day. Like just give us a flavor of the kind of companies that are potentially going to be built or are going to be invited into the studio, just to have an idea of what we're talking about concretely here.
Yeah, so I'll highlight two out of the eight. The first one is called Eden Seeds, which is going to be a farmer-owned indigenous seed company. So what we're basically working on is access to affordable, resilient, locally fit indigenous seeds, and putting them in the markets as a real and viable alternative to the hybrid seeds that are being promoted as well, right? And so, we know seeds, it's the basis of agriculture. It's also a big opportunity of fostering more climate resilient crops and improving livelihoods for farmers in the end. How do they want to do this? They basically want to be the connecting agent between seed producers, individuals, community seed banks, and other groups that will supply those indigenous seeds, and then making them available for sale directly to organized farmer groups, farmer cooperatives, but also by selling them via local input dealers. No? So again, putting the regenerative, the agroecological alternative right next to the hybrids and maybe also GMO seeds you might find. So that's Eden Seeds. Really, really enthusiastic about this. We're partnering with organizations like Oxfam, who've worked on community seed banks and really trying to unlock that access to a larger seed market for seed producers in Uganda. The second one is called Garden Fresh, and they basically want to extend post-harvest shelf life in fruits and vegetables with natural preservative solutions. And this one is, I think it's so important because of the huge health risks we are now running when consuming, for instance, tomatoes in Uganda. Nearly all tomatoes in Uganda are sprayed with mancozeb, which is a slow killer. It's forbidden for use in Europe because of its potential effects, birth defects, reproductive health, reproductive system effects, and also potentially being carcinogenic. And so this mancozeb is being applied before, during, and after harvest, because farmers have come to believe that mancozeb also extends post-harvest shelf life, which it actually doesn't. But it's now kind of a quality seal to have the white powder on your tomatoes, which is basically an agrochemical you're buying with the tomatoes. And so, this the health risks of consuming these tomatoes on a daily basis for Ugandans is they're so huge, and being able to replace that agrochemical with a natural alternative that is affordable and doesn't cost more than the chemical substance. I think that's just a huge business and impact opportunity alike.
Yeah, absolutely. And to move to a few questions, we always like to ask, what, let's say we're doing this live, or you've done your first sort of pitch day, not demo day yet, let's say live, and the room is full of investors. So from all East Africa, they came to you to hear about this agroecology and business together, which might be two words they haven't naturally, as most investors, haven't naturally put together yet. If at the end of the day, of the evening, if there's one thing you want them to remember, what seed would you like to place in their head that they walk away? Of course, they're going to be enthusiastic about soil, about agriculture, etc. But if there's one thing you would like them to remember, what would you like to tell impact investors and investors in general? What would you like them to remember and hopefully start working on and maybe investing in?
Well, I think part of what Rutical tries to do is also moving away the attention from the West and Australia, and really showing the world that you can invest in Africa, you can invest also in other continents, in Asia, Latin America, and so on. And so my main call to action would be invest in Africa. You know? 2/3 of agricultural lands on the continent are depleted. 3 billion people, including 3/4 of all Africans, cannot afford a healthy diet. And in a country like Uganda, you have 400,000 job market entrants every year against merely 9,000 formally created jobs, right? So there is a huge job creation, employment opportunity there as well. And of course, as Joachim said before, agriculture is the backbone, and about 3/4 of the active population are employed in agriculture. So that's where we can also achieve substantial impact. And so just one more figure, by 2050, 1 in 4 people on the planet will be African. And even today, already close to 1 billion Africans are younger than 35 years old. No? So there's a huge opportunity also for job creation towards the future. And so, yeah, the impact opportunity is huge. And when I say impact, I mean impact by doing business, no? But business in regenerative agriculture while holding the agroecological principles high. And if you're looking for specific topics to invest in, I'm really excited about water cycles, landscape permaculture on one hand, and then also the nutrient density piece and food as medicine part on the other, right? So yeah, those topics are really keen to my heart, and we're actually planning to launch an additional business this year being built in-house on that topic of how can we improve the water harvesting capacity of the landscape by applying watershed level landscape permaculture principles, and how can we build a business out of that, right? So that's something we're going to look into. Structurally, I would also invite investors to help us build the infrastructure to mobilize and de-risk investments in regenerative agriculture and food system transformation in Uganda and in East Africa overall. Joachim, over to you.
I think the only thing I want to add there is I think what is clear for all of us in the world is that we need to change how we farm, right? We need to change how we grow and produce our food. Regenerative agriculture and agroecology offer the best opportunity to do that. So what is also clear, especially in this part of the world, to what Anas has mentioned, is there are businesses in regenerative agriculture that we are seeing through Accelerator, the incubator, through Rutico, that need financing. And that we need to channel capital to advance these ideas of agroecology and regenerative agriculture. One of the challenges, though, is that the current traditional ways of financing, like the VC model, are not sufficient for these businesses. And this is because of, things like high minimum investment sizes, looking to invest at least $100,000, high collateral demands, high interest rates, short loan periods. Most of the investment that exists right now is geared towards conventional agriculture, which has little consideration for the longer-term perspective, diverse biodiversity, and little respect for indigenous knowledge. And so we need to channel more financing to this sector, and we need new financing models that are tailored to the profile of regenerative agriculture businesses. So some of the work we're doing with Rutico, with the Nature Acceleration Fund, is to try and uncover some of these financing models that we can share with the world.
Yeah, I just want to add to that, with Shona, we are really working on building the momentum, but also the ecosystem for agroecological entrepreneurship in East Africa. And I think with our studio model, we are capable, we have our boots on the ground to invest $5,000 or $50,000, US dollars, euros, whatever, into those businesses. We can actually build those businesses, make sure they address key challenges in the food system, and we can also make them investable and bring them up to the higher ticket sizes. No, and typical fund structures, they need to look at smaller minimum tickets, while we as a studio, I think, really provide an opportunity of, as I said, no de-risking and mobilizing those investments into region ag.
You mean higher minimum tickets? Yeah, typical fund size.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's definitely, yeah, the approach is fascinating to follow over time. Hence, we're doing this interview. Hence, we're following Fresh Ventures, etc., to see, like you said before, like you can turn it into a playbook, and it doesn't mean like you're building a factory for companies, but it does mean a lot of the pieces of a company of coming up and testing, etc., can be structured in a different way and can be sped up a lot. Like you mentioned, Joachim, like in 3 months you can do so much, and the failure rate can go way down, which is also a waste of talent. Like you spend 2 years building something that doesn't go anywhere, and so we need way more people that are capable of building businesses, that are helped to build their businesses, to do those businesses in agroecology with all the support, and of course the ownership structures, etc. We need to have different. And a question we love to ask, coming from the deep agroecology and regenerative space, from John Kempf, that he asks it in a slightly different way, but we ask it: what do you believe to be true about regenerative agriculture that others don't believe to be true? So where are you contrarian, let's say, in your community or in your bubble?
So on my side, I would say that we can feed the masses with organic foods, and there's always this perception of organic food, certified or not, being more expensive, right? Or being for the niche in Kampala or export markets to Europe and the US. But I'm deeply convinced that regenerative agricultural food in countries like Uganda is not and also should not be more expensive than what we can find on the market. Of course, pressure on prices are really high, but we need to stop hunting for price premiums. We need to stop building those niche and elite export markets for organic. We really need to ask ourselves the question: how can we feed all Ugandans with healthy, nutritious, and safe food? So that's what Rutical is really working on. And throughout our venture building process, we've been really challenging our founders in residence continuously on that topic of yes, but how will you serve mainstream Ugandan consumers and not only the elite in Kampala or abroad? No, so that's really a key point for me. And I'm not alone. I know Sylvia Curia, who might be listening, an organic farmer champion in Kenya, deeply believes what I just said. And there's also FIBL, no, the Organic Food, the Organic Research Institute in Switzerland. They've launched a SISCOM study, Systems Comparison Study, in Kenya, Bolivia, and India a few years ago. And they basically found that both chemical and organic production at low intensity actually produce at loss, while high management organic farming is as performant as intensive chemical agriculture, right? The former needs more knowledge and labor, but is less input dependent and less cost heavy in that sense. So yeah, organic food can save mainstream Ugandan consumers.
And what about you, Joachim? Where do you think different in that sense, or how, what do you believe to be true that others don't about regenerative agriculture?
Yeah, I think I'll start with the obvious. If we don't change the way we produce our food, we're all going to die. We've seen an influx of diseases here locally. You know, that are unexplainable, right? We've seen immunity suffering locally. That's unexplainable. We need healthier and more nutritious food on the market for ourselves, right? So I think that's the first. And regenerative agriculture offers the opportunity to increase this access to safe, healthy, safe, and nutritious food for our people, for our populations. So that's the first for me. The second that I see that, you know, may not be, maybe many people believe it, but farmers are badly in need of more natural ways of farming. Like I said earlier on, they see the use of chemicals. They don't like it, but they go ahead and do it because they have very little alternatives. But regenerative agriculture and agroecology offer these options for them. So if you're able to show them and show them, you know, that it works, then I believe that most farmers will transition towards regenerative agriculture and agroecology. And this is one of the things we're excited about building in our work and at Rutical, offering these options to them so that they can farm more naturally, farm more agroecologically, farm more regeneratively.
Very, very good answer. I think the myth of production, like Mohannes, and yield, and the myth of farmers like to put and spray and plow and destroy. I think those two are some very big ones that us in the city or people that are not daily interacting with land should wrap their head around, that those are myths. And we like to tell them, and there are a lot of very strong incentives to keep telling those myths, but they are still myths. And so let's stop telling them, maybe, or let's at least challenge them every time we hear them. And then to usually one of the final questions, let's see, because they also lead to rabbit holes. But if you have a magic wand, or you had a magic wand, and you could change one thing overnight, what would that be?
Yeah. So what I would change overnight is to change the rule of the game called capitalism, and in particular venture capitalism. And I believe steward ownership is a way to do that. No, so I would magically apply steward ownership to all existing and new businesses worldwide. So why would I do that? I think we see the typical flaws of venture capitalism, and overall growing and staggering levels of inequality. No, 1% of the world owns more than all the rest of us combined, and the way our businesses are financed, managed, and owned also leads to these flaws of capitalism as I see them. One of them is short-termism. No, that hunting for unicorns, extractive capitalism, expecting returns from companies until the end of times, while your initial maybe investment was also limited in the overall growth of that company over time. We could argue. We see absentee ownership, people at the other side of the world calling the shots of a company in Uganda or East Africa, and also that fact that more money leads to more ownership, right? And typically founders, initially purpose-driven founders, also tend to lose ownership fast as they raise more money, and that also leads to the dilution of the values and ideas behind the startup initially, let alone selling to the highest bidder. No, so in short, mission drift is really, I would say, a big threat to building purpose-driven enterprises, and so we need a way to protect the purpose of a company, and this is what we do with steward ownership. I'll explain how it works in a minute, but the advantages are numerous of steward ownership. First of all, they allow us to have a long-term perspective on the growth and impact of a business. We can act as a good ancestor, or we can apply what's called cathedral thinking, or intergenerational thinking. It allows for companies to self-govern, for the company that are in charge of the day-to-day operations of that company, for those people to allow them to steer the company towards its purpose. It allows for increase in productivity, profits, and impact. A study in Denmark has shown that steward-owned companies tend to live much longer. They are 6 times more likely to celebrate their 40th birthday. It allows to retain talent, to nurture talent, and it also allows for succession planning, to leave the company from one generation to the next generation of capable and purpose-driven stewards. And so, in short, it allows for a purpose lock-in, protecting the company from mission drifting. And it's quite simple, actually, in theory at least. Steward ownership proposes a strict separation between the financial and the decision rights in a company. So investors can still invest. They can still expect a fair return on their investment. However, usually those returns are capped in time, and we talk of predetermined exits. So if this happens, then that's the kind of exit modality we'll choose for. And so because of that strict separation between financial and decision rights, the company is now, or the decisions are made by the founders, the employees, and other closely involved stakeholders rather than absentee financial owners. And so this purpose lock happens with a golden shareholder, which is a third party independent organization that holds certain veto rights in the company as a mission guarantor, and is obliged to veto any changes to the company structures that would go against its initial purpose. So it doesn't only protect the purpose of a company, it also protects its founders from losing ownership. And I think this is what's something that really talks to our Ugandan or our first founders in residence, is to leave a legacy, to build an impactful business that gives back to the community, but also to protect their own involvement and say in the future of the business, and avoid mission drift at all costs. So steward ownership. It's a movement. It's decades old, in some cases even ages old, like Zeiss since the 1800s. Some steward-owned companies are publicly listed, like Carlsberg, Ecosia, my favorite search engine, competing with Google on steward ownership principles. And then Patagonia, that recently gave their company away to Mother Nature. No, they're all examples of very successful steward ownership companies, and we're building a few more here in Uganda.
And what about you? I'll put the interview we did with Armin, one of the founders of Purpose in Germany, that really pushed, let's say, the modern revival of steward ownership in the show notes below. But what about you, Joachim? If you had a magic wand, what would you change overnight?
Yeah, I think of, you know, everything we're already seeing, doing and promoting right now. How do we make regenerative agriculture and agroecology the norm of farming for our world, to produce healthy and nutritious food while farming in harmony with nature and providing a comfortable livelihood to our farmers? That's what I would wish for overnight.
And then to ask a final question, I know we are coming up on time, and I want to be conscious of both of your times as well. If you had $1 billion or €1 billion, you can pick the currency. What would you do? I'm not looking for exact dollar amounts or euros amounts, but I'm looking for what you would focus on. What I'm asking to both, you can choose who takes the question. But what would you do if you had to put to work, so it is an investment, €1 billion or dollars?
I think I would try and scale and just continue what we are doing, but take it, of course, to the next level. With an iteration-based approach, right? So always focusing on in-country ownership, very strong partnerships like the one we're having with Shona here in Uganda. And I would probably set up that structure or infrastructure to invest in regenerative agriculture and agroecological businesses. I've been discussing this with Bart actually recently, Bart from Fresh Ventures. Our shared dream is to create a network of regenerative startup studios that do what we do in like we're doing it now in the Netherlands and in Uganda, but across the world and across different geographies and agronomical conditions. And so I would spend the first tranche of money in setting up 10, then 20, then 100 regenerative startup studios across the world. Preferably, I would say with a national focus. The second tranche I would use to kickstart funding for the businesses that come out of those startup studios. First of all, to give them some startup capital to get some runway to go and build up to product market fit. We are investing $7,000 in the companies we will be co-founding here in Uganda in the coming months. Then I would also include a stipend for the founders to take off the financial pressure of those founders and allow them to really focus full-time on building their business. Because they have a lot of other things going and distractions, just as a risk diversification strategy. The founders in Uganda tend to have multiple revenue streams going, and rightly so. So I would try to balance that a bit with an Ashoka kind of fellowship for early day agroecological entrepreneurs. And then I would spend probably most of the money on establishing something like a revolving loan fund, where we can first invest $50,000, then $150,000, then $500,000 and more into the businesses that come out of our studios and pipeline, but also opening this to other regenerative businesses out there. I know a Grounded Investment Company has raised some funding too. I see a lot of like-minded initiatives all trying to raise their fund, and I think there would be a lot of value in an overarching funding structure to make that kind of investments. And we could compare this to agroforestry, right? I would invest now, expect the first fruits to come in 3 to 7 years from now, and then the bigger returns coming after that. No, so we need patient long-term capital, and it's not all about the monetary value we'll be creating. We can multiply that one if we also factor in social benefits, biodiversity increase, the improvement in water holding capacity, and so on. So all those other types of value should also be valued. And on top of that, I would save some money to invest in the wider ecosystem. No, AFSA,
I know where
AFSA, the African Food and Sovereignty Alliance, and the Agroecology Funds, they're doing great work in funding the grassroots agroecology movement in Africa on the philanthropic and civil society levels. And I think we should also spend more money in knowledge work and advocacy for more agroecological and purpose-driven entrepreneurship.
And then Joachim, I don't know, you I know you prepared both for these questions. Do you have anything to add to that? I know you have to run to a next meeting and I want to wrap up as well. And we're running out of time already a bit. Do you have anything to add to spending a billion or investing a billion euros or dollars?
Yeah, no, in addition to what Hannes has mentioned, right? How do we use this, really quickly, first of all, to, like I mentioned, the traditional investing models may not work for these kinds of businesses. And so one of the questions we've been asking ourselves as well is, how do you structure the right investment into regenerative agriculture businesses to help them grow while to help them grow while uplifting farmers and helping farmers transition to agroecology. And so, we'd use the first initial tranche to unearth these right investment models that can then help us successfully catalyze the next $100 billion or $1 trillion in capital to regenerative agriculture businesses in this part of the world, but also globally.
And with that, I think it's a perfect end to this conversation. I'm very much looking forward to following Rutico over time. And of course, the businesses, they're going to be invited in the studio and then are going to graduate from the studio at some point. And then the next cohort and the next and probably different countries as well. I think you've come an enormous way since I heard about the first ideas. And of course, building on the enormous work already done by Joachim and the team to get this. And then there's the speed. Suddenly it goes enormously fast. So thank you so much for both of you for joining here in a busy day and to share this part of the journey. And then we'll keep checking in on the journey that continues.
Thank you, Koen.
Yeah, thanks, Koen. I've spent countless hours on the road in Uganda listening to your podcast and learning from your community. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. For the show notes and links we discussed in this episode, check out our website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/posts. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts? That really helps. Thanks again and see you next time.